Sourcing Matters Podcast. This is your host, Aaron Niederhoven, sharing stories of our food.
And welcome back to Sourcing Matters. This is your host, Aaron Niederhoven. Get this. In 2017, female founders received just 2% of venture capital dollars. That represents $1 billion of the $85 billion total invested across all sectors. Somehow that just doesn't seem to correlate with the demographics of our population. Additionally, this just doesn't make sense, and at least from my perspective. When looking at 20-something-year-old young dudes, or even, in many cases, 30-something-year-old guys, moving up the ranks, we'll finally become men, maybe at 40s, as compared to young women who are often much more mature and responsible in those brackets. Why do we empower so many fools with our money as compared to responsible young adults? That's a question. I think that says a broad-reaching answers to it, but there are exceptions to that rule. Obviously, I'm generalizing here. And the guy who's been through a few of those learning lessons and through all those stages myself, I would make an analogy of driving a car. So insurance, car insurance for young men is always higher because we take uncalculated risks. I, too, would fall victim in that category as a younger man. And I'd think twice about letting my grade school kids get in a car with a 20-something-year-old dude as compared to a young woman. So I know firsthand these bad choices, both the ones that I have made and my friends have made, that you make as a young guy. And there's obviously exceptions to the rules. And whether that is investing in someone's concept or empowering them to manage your primary assets like your kids, it does come down to the individual. So maybe that's why startups have such failure rates, as we empower the wrong people. Then maybe we have too many car crashes that are waiting to happen because of that. On the ag side of things, in the U.S., according to 2012 USDA data, 30% of all farmers are women. Those women control only 7% of farmland and account for only 3% of total agricultural sales. The 2012 data also shows that there are nearly 1 million U.S. farmers, women U.S. farmers, and that was down a few percentage points from 2007. Women farmers are on other parts of the world, like East Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa, represent well over 50%. So after attending many ag and investment conferences around the U.S. in the last 5 to 10 years, that I think the paradigm is changing. Just last week, I was down at an ag and food conference in Baltimore, Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, and Fred Kirschman explained that his hope and enthusiasm for food and regenerative agriculture is directly tied to the parity of women that he sees in his programs. He's involved in, obviously, a progressive program at Stone Barns in Tarrytown, New York, and more on the conventional routes in Iowa State in Ames, Iowa. So, if the future is female, maybe that all starts with how we feed ourselves and who we fund to push the envelope. Our guest today is doing something about that. Today, we welcome Karen Karp, who's the president of KKNP out of New York City. Hello, Karen. How are you?
I'm doing great today. Thank you. Perhaps our first day of snow. I think the earliest snow we've had in New York, November 15th, I think since I can remember. So it's a dark day, but it's warm and cozy inside, and I'm happy to speak with you.
Oh, well, maybe we picked a good day to do it, right? Out of the wind and the cold. So could you share with us a bit of your new initiative that you've launched with AgFunder and the New Food Economy called Investigating the Role of Women Capital and the Transformation of Food and Agriculture?
Sure, I'd love to. Thank you so much for asking about it and for your very insightful analogy, I would say, about men and young men and driving, or dudes and driving. So we'll get to that in a little bit later. Yes. Yeah, so in June last year, I was retained to produce an event and facilitate a conversation around a film premiere here in New York City called From Farms to Incubators. And it's a documentary. It's about a 27-minute documentary made by a journalist who followed several sets of immigrant women ag tech entrepreneurs over the course of a couple of years working in California, who are out there every day both, competing with guys and other women for funding for this sector that's just blossoming in California and elsewhere across the country and the world, the ag tech sector, but that bring a very unique story and background to the work, themselves being either themselves immigrants to the United States or their parents as immigrants. And for the cases of the women whose parents were immigrants, their parents were farm workers mostly in Salinas Valley in California, which most people who know anything about agriculture in the U.S. know that Salinas has been the salad bowl for the United States for a good number of years. And so the film followed the trajectory of these women as they participate in an extremely male-dominated sector, ag tech, food tech, very male-dominated sector. And it dove into their particular stories, which include the background, some of which I just told you, and also their approach to their innovations and their challenges with being able to grow their enterprises. And in the course of facilitating the panel, and Louisa Burwood Taylor from Ag Funder News was on the panel, as was the filmmaker Amy Wu, and one of the entrepreneurs in the films, and as I said, the New Food Economy, and Kate Cox, who's the executive editor of the New Food Economy, were the kind of sponsors of this program. Over the course of preparing for my facilitation for that event, I started digging into some of the literature about women, capital, the gaps, the needs, etc. I had an instinct about the prejudices or biases against women raising money, and those were just kind of confirmed by all the reports that I've read. I mean, I read 100 reports. I wrote a 40-page paper over the summer about it, and just to work it out in my mind, like what's needed or what really needs to happen to kind of to showcase the innovation and the ideas and the strengths and the talents that women are bringing to this really important problem we have of addressing agriculture and food needs across the globe. And one of the things that I played around with in the facilitation was the notion of words that are used to describe women entrepreneurs, women founders, women business owners, even if they aren't the founders of those businesses, women in the C-suite of companies. And it turns out that there's a whole bunch of myths about women entrepreneurs, women founders, women executives. And it also turns out that those myths are really starting to be debunked through very intensive research. So what I did in facilitating that panel was I threw out some of those myths and I asked the audience to reframe those myths for describing the strengths of women. And it was very kind of spontaneous. I didn't plan really to do that. I just was happy that I had done that research to have it in my back pocket. But it just seemed in that room at that night, June 22nd, 2018, at the New School, in a theater in the New School, where the room was filled, 90% of the people in the room were women coming to an ag tech conversation. We had an amazing amount of power in that room to start to reframe the conversation. And so afterwards, we got we being New Food Economy, Ag Funder, Karen Karpen Partners, KKP, we were getting calls, we were getting emails, we were getting all sorts of things from people saying, that was really powerful, what are you doing next? And so we kind of sat back and we thought, what are we going to do next? And what we're doing next is that we have launched this investigation into the role of women capital and the transformation of food and agriculture. And I can explain a little bit more about specifically what we're doing and why we're doing it, but I'll just stop there in case you have another question to ask about that.
Yeah, I'd like to obviously learn more about it, but I'd love to know, the world of finance is obviously known for being an old boys network. So What terminology did you focus on reframing? Was it derogatory, negative conversation? Was it downputting and belittling information? What did you find?
Yes. So some of the myths, and I can quickly look them up if we want to go into them specifically, but some of them were things that you've heard before, and actually you alluded to in your insurance analogy, that women are not risk takers. Women are bad managers. Women are inefficient because they're distracted because they have so many things that they have to do in their lives. But the ones particularly around not being risk takers and being bad managers really stuck in my craw. And those are the ones that I really worked around with the group in the audience. And, you know, if you take a word like, you know, risk taking, it depends on what you mean by risk. So, you know, if men are considered risk takers because they're very good at attracting and obtaining other people's capital and investing in it or using it to try out new ideas, that's definitely one definition of risk taking. And if people are saying that women are not risk takers because they are not doing that, is it because they don't have the ability to do it? Is it because nobody wants to fund them to do it? Or is it because it's just not their way? That is not the way that women want to necessarily ideate, create, and grow an enterprise with that kind of high level of financial risk taking with somebody else's money. So a lot of times in that case, it comes down to women's values, their values around money, their values around taking money and doing good with it, as opposed to taking it and sort of unconditionally risking it. So there's tons of literature about all of this for women entrepreneurs. There's no literature really about women founders or women entrepreneurs across the agri-food sector. So that's really one of the main impetuses for how we're starting this. Hmm. The other myth, though, was super interesting, that women are bad managers. That one really kind of pissed me off as somebody who founded my own company 28 and a half years ago and have been running it successfully, albeit we are a small organization, but successfully for 28 and a half years. We have never had a year where we have lost money in that time. I mean, I do have to say a caveat. One year we lost $4,000, and that was 2009 after the 2008 recession. But in 28 and a half years, I've lost $4,000, and it cost me $6,000 to start this business. So who is defining the meaning of these words, good manager, risk taker? I mean, that was something that really interested me, as well as Kate and Louisa from New Food Economy and Ag Funder News, respectively, really, really interested us, because we're like, whoa, you know, they're in the business of words. How is language a detractor for women to enable the development of their visions and execute on their solutions for food and agriculture? So that's really how this whole initiative started.
Fascinating. And so you bundled it together, like, you know, learning this in June. You have since now written a scope of work of what this will represent, and you're in the process of raising capital to do this deep dive. What is the process that you'll be using to do that deep dive, and what outcomes and results are you hoping to find from this information?
Yes, thank you. Great question. And right in you're asking me the question of the thing that we are right. Literally, we have just taken the dive into the pool, so to speak. So what we are doing. So as I mentioned, one of the things that I learned over the summer when I was doing all of this research and writing this, you know, quasi-academic paper, quasi-missive, which now we've distilled down to a 4-page version and a 10-page version, which everybody who reads this should be very thankful for, is that no data exists for women founders across the agriculture food spectrum. And that's everything from agriculture to food tech to ag tech to women chefs and restaurateurs, et cetera. Data does not exist for women across in this arc in our sector, whereas it does exist for women across all sectors, and particularly the technology sector is really, really being looked at and scrutinized quite heavily through journalistic writing and some academic writing. But nothing exists to sort of describe what's happening with women who are working across agriculture and food. So because of the collaboration that we established with Louisa and AgFunder, AgFunder News and AgFunder, AgFunder has been keeping a very robust database, which now totals about 5,000 companies that have been invested in across the agriculture food sector for the last 5 years, 5,000 deals they have detail about. They are generously loaning this initiative their database, which we have just hired to NYU Stern interns to work with us on parsing for the deals that have been made to women and the deals that have been made by women. Because in addition to the fact that women are raising less money, and they raise less money as they go through the investment cycles, by the way. So they raise more at seed, perhaps, than others. But as they go through the cycles of A, B, et cetera, they're proportionately raising less. That's another issue. The decision makers, the investment decision makers, 82% of the time are men. So we've got kind of like a dual thing that we're looking at. How are women accessing capital and from whom to execute on their food and agriculture businesses and innovations and solutions? And so we are going to have the first database by the end of December. We will have a first pretty good pass at this database with some initial findings that we will have about women in agriculture and food compared to men in this sector based on this full database of 5,000 deals. At the same time, Louisa and Kate and I are going to conferences, speaking at conferences. We are developing a list of about 150 people that we want to interview. So we'll be setting up those interviews to take place in the first quarter of 2019. The interviews are really across the board with investors, both male and female, policymakers, entrepreneurs, certainly male entrepreneurs, female entrepreneurs, the organizations that are supporting entrepreneurs and founders across the agriculture food sector, and funds. So funds that are supporting women, funds that are just not making a gender specification in their funding. We want to make a case not for more women getting engaged in funding women. We want to ungender this conversation in a way, which now the advancement on this topic is really happening by women. So there are women that are setting up funds to fund women. There are women that are setting up groups to support women. All of that is really fantastic, but it's not what we want to do. Our vision is to level the overall playing field, which is to really have an educational component to what we're doing to investors of all genders and to entrepreneurs of all genders about the role and the power of women. So that's our vision, and how we're getting there is by first parsing the data. So people love numbers, so we're going to have them, conducting the interviews, participating in conferences, being on podcasts such as yours, thank you so much.
Of course.
And AgFunder and the New Food Economy will each be developing some long-form pieces about our efforts that will be published on their websites and also through the podcasts that they are doing. So by the end of April, we will have the data, we will have the stories, we will have a white paper that we will produce, we will have the stories that will be written and published in AgFunder and New Food Economy, the podcasts, and we will know by then what's needed to address this issue and try to move forward on our vision, meaning is it a new fund? Is it an index? Is it an organization? is it a campaign? And we think we'll start with a campaign, with an education campaign targeted to the investment and the policy community around the strengths and opportunities of women founders across agriculture and food.
It is an important subject, and gender equality has been obviously in recent news for many reasons. Even in looking at these large organizations in pay scale, and you know, we first met in New York at an event in October around sustainable investment opportunities for women. It was called the High Water Women Investing Impact Symposium. And it seemed to be an opportunity for female investors and money managers to gather together and share some thoughts, to learn about intriguing ideas, to define a rallying cry moving forward. And the panel that we were on together looked at regenerative agriculture and the opportunity, obviously, for investing in women, and the opportunity is women founders. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. What I found interesting from that event is it seemed that a lot of the individuals in the room were those decision makers, which you had stated were 82% men in normal case, but maybe we had a higher representation of women, whether it's the LPs or if they run a foundation or if they're in control of some asset pool. How do you work with that group? Maybe initially, maybe it's a proof case, maybe it's an anchor group, to take the data that you'll be parsing and the educational campaign. How do you work with that group? Do you work with them first? Do you save them till the tail end? What's the process in your mind for engaging that group?
Yes. So, are you talking about the people, the group being the people that attend the High Water Women event, or the group being High Water Women as an organization?
I was more speaking to the individuals that were speaking, specifically the money managers in the room.
Yes. Okay. So, so yes, there is a proportionately high number of women at that event. I think it's because of the name of the organization, High Water Women. I think it does naturally attract more women to it. So I think what's interesting about your question is, I'm not sure I yet consider the people that were in that room who are philanthropists, managers of family offices, managers of the funds of family offices, regular investors, so to speak, just sort of like, you know, VCs or investment bankers or impact investors. I'm not sure that I hold them in my head as a group. And that might not be the real point of your question, but it's interesting for me to think about, are they a group? You know, is it a group of mixed kind of like a quilt of a range of different kind of investors, mm-hmm. that you put them together and they form the community of people that would be interested in this topic? I'm not sure. So your question, I might not be answering the question the way you intended it, but it's making me think about how we would do that. But I think, you know, to answer your question just sort of, you know, logically, or I think how you meant it is, we are starting with the people that we know, and those include people that I've met at events such as High Water Women. This is the third year that I've participated at High Water Women. The first 2 years were actually as facilitators of panels, and last year was on a panel about regenerative agriculture. I mean, facilitating one, and so this year I was on your panel, which was fun. I mean, I'm really pretty much feel like with both the topics of regenerative agriculture, which is making up a bigger part of the work that we do at KKNP, and the topic of investing in the agriculture food sector, full stop, both of those are real horizon issues, meaning they're things that are on the horizon now that are just growing. And what's really interesting to see is the range of people who are coming to events like this and trying to learn what this is all about, both what gender equity is about and also what topics like investing in regenerative agriculture or investing in initiatives to raise awareness about the, you know, the dire climate situation that we're in now. And, of course, food and agriculture are, you know, 30% of the contributors to climate change, so our field is like right in the hot seat. So I hope I answered your question.
No, it was good. I think your analogy of having it as a quilt is a good scenario. It is a bit of towing the water from different perspectives. And I also found from, I don't know the demographics of the room of exactly who was what, but based off the questions we received and the folks that I also knew in the audience, it did seem that they were broad representation. And yeah, my question was, do you start, you know, with that initial group that has a vested interest or intrigue in what you're talking about and using it as a way to take an iterative approach of getting your data out there and then your educational campaign to be applicable to a broader audience?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the ways I see it and it being that audience, for example, and as just a kind of example of audiences at all of these kinds of events now, is that the learning curve is huge. The learning curve is, if somebody has attached a label to themselves as an impact investor, if typically, in my experience, if you're coming from the kind of non-impact investor world, if you're coming from investment banking or you're coming from private equity or if you're coming from you know, any kind of traditional financial investment entity, you've got a lot to learn before you can be impactful as an impact investor. What I'm seeing, and I'm actually curious to ask you a question about what you're seeing, because you're going to a lot of the same events I'm going to, or similar types at least, is I don't think that the core principles by which a lot of the really important things, and let's just stay to agriculture and food because that's what I know, or community health, those three topics, I'm not sure that the folks that are getting into impact investing fully understand the kind of long view approach that's needed to see results. And I mean to see results at all, but also to see results that are similar to or like the results they've been seeing in their portfolios from their prior experience. In other words, what I'm seeing is impact investing is a hot trend, but investors want the same kind of returns that they've been getting from a capitalist-driven, short view shed culture that we have about ROI.
I don't disagree. I think it's a space of innovation. We are so accustomed to the traditional vehicles that we've been used to for investing that some of these practices that you're discussing, whether it's investing in soil health or ocean health or looking at food systems as a collective in a systems thinking approach, change the horizon and the scope of what our traditional investment vehicles are built for. And the other fundamental problem associated with that is, I think it's what you're alluding to, is so much of capital market investing, especially in the venture capital side, has been directly associated to deal creation instead of value creation, that maybe that's the space where impact has to play. And it also, that in itself, has the question of when does impact associate with philanthropy and then directly come into this, boy, if this is a circular economy we're talking about, well, that's our new baseline. So this is really all money's going into investment vehicles.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And you know, when you were talking just now and I was saying yes, and you're saying it better than I'm saying it, so I'm glad we're having this conversation so I can learn how to say it better. I'm also thinking about, in terms of, because I know you want to sort of get to know a little bit about what we do here at KKNP, is one of the things that we're known for and in the sectors that we work in, which is agriculture, food, and community health, and our clients have been, since the second year of my starting this company, have been really cross-sector in terms of being for-profit, nonprofit, government, philanthropist, and educational sectors. We flow seamlessly between all of these sectors, which is just something that came very naturally to me, and I don't know why. Don't ask me why it came naturally to me, because it's not necessarily the kind of sort of, I don't come from that gene pool in my family. It's not in my family's DNA to do that kind of thing. But it has been one of the strategic principles that I've had for my business since the beginning, since 1990, is to create change in the world, you have to speak the language of many different kinds of people and figure out where the words are and where the ideas are that are the same and bring people together around them. And it's, you know, we've done surveys over the years of, you know, from our clients, like, what are, you know, why are the reasons you call us to work on a project, or what did you get the most out of? And consistently, sort of what they call the network effect is what our clients most value about us, that they can come to us as a philanthropist and say, you know, we really want to get to understand the retail food sector. And they trust, they have a level of trust in us because they know we know how to work with philanthropists, but that we also do all this work on the for-profit side. And I think that to use that as a metaphor for what I think needs to happen in the investment sector right now, I think that more people from different walks of life, so to speak, before they get all excited about investing capital or moving capital or investing capital, they need to spend a little bit more time getting to know each other, getting to know each other as people, getting to know each other as, about the principles and the objectives and the strategies that the other organizations are built on and are thriving for, because I think that there just isn't enough knowledge. Again, what I said earlier, there just isn't enough knowledge about the different, I really don't want to use the word value system, so help me come up with a different phrase here, but the sort of different paradigms that people work in different sectors. And if you can get to shared paradigms or understanding of impact, then I think it's the time to start activating some capital. But I think there's been a leapfrog, and I think it's going to come back to bite us.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It's we've dehumanized many of these relational discussions where you've built a level of trust and association. And let me read a little bit about your background, because I think it would be key for our listening audience to understand why you have this cross-platform, multidimensional perspective. So Karen Karp is a fourth generation food entrepreneur. Her grandfather, or great-grandfather, Morris, was a first generation immigrant from the Ukraine and opened a butter, eggs, and cheese wholesale outlet in Manhattan's far west side, and later a feed and seed company on Coney Island in Brooklyn. Karen's father served the farmers of Long Island East End as a real estate broker, concentrating on industrial and agricultural properties, and brokered the country's first transfer of development rights deal in the 1970s. As you had mentioned, 28 and a half years ago in 1990, you established the Karen Karp and Partners program, which developed a range of bespoke strategies that explore the interconnections between agriculture, food, policy, and people, and how to marry common interests for for-profit and nonprofit sectors. KKNP has grown to become a nationally respected boutique consultancy with a uniquely skilled staff and a diverse roster of clients. Karen and her team are equally adept in a boardroom, in a kitchen, or on land, and their systems-based approach is always conceptually rigorous and grounded in practical understanding. I think that's really encapsulate what we just talked about. You bring in much of this systems thinking to the investment world now, or to the agricultural world. And this lens of doing it through the perspective of gender equality seems to be pretty unique from my perspective. At least that's what I've seen in the time that I've spent. So that does create a unique and maybe timely opportunity for KKNP to be involved in this discussion. How do you take what you've built, what you've established, what you've created, and continue to take that leadership role and, you know, be an agent of change here?
Big, big block of responsibility on my shoulders. Thank you.
There it is. You've got 30 seconds to change the world. There it is, Karen.
Well, what I'm doing here and what we are doing here at KKMB is really building on, as you said, building on the foundation that we have been consistently building ever since I started the business. So for me, a lot of this is, you know, to use a phrase, you know, an organic evolution of what I and we have been doing for 20, 25 plus years. So I've developed curricula for women entrepreneurs in food and out of food. I've done some work for the Kauffman Foundation, which is a major foundation working to support entrepreneurship. I've written a co-written minor degree program in culinary entrepreneurship that's taught at a culinary school in Mississippi. I've been a member of women's presidents organizations and other women's business groups. And, you know, for me, it's what's funny is that I don't think of myself as a feminist. And one of the things for me, I think, at this moment in time is to, again, look at that word, feminist, and look at my own definition or interpretation of what that means and why I don't consider myself one and start to consider myself one. Because I think when growing up in the, I became an adult in the 1970s, and feminism was really on the rise. And what I saw out there was a lot of anger and a lot of advocacy and a lot of intelligence that was just like throwing stuff at the wall and kind of really work for other people, really working hard to see what stuck. And I was lucky enough to come at the kind of second wave of that, where things were a lot easier for me. And I never really felt that I was held back from what I wanted to do because I was a woman. I think I was wrong about that. I think there are many things that I didn't try to do because I believed that I wouldn't achieve them because I was a woman, but I have been unconscious of those. So there's sort of like a stubborn determinism that I've had throughout the course of my career to make way in the field that I want to be in for my particular point of view. And I think that's the approach that we're kind of taking now. It's like, I'm not going to bang people over the head with it, but I want to meet people where they are and help them and help myself evolve our own understanding of what's possible. So, you know, practically speaking, what I'm doing is speaking at events like High Water Women. And in fact, I think you know this, but I came to your panel an hour after facilitating a conversation at the Bloomberg Sustainable Business Summit between the head of seed marketing for Syngenta, the global head of seed marketing for Syngenta, and the U.S. President of Ahold. And it was sustainable investment summit, and I was facilitating this conversation between these two executives that control a ton of money and a ton of R&D and a ton of the messaging around the future of food. And, you know, they're at the, you know, those kinds of executives, not all of them, and certainly not these two, some of them are just at the very, very beginning of their own journey. And what I want to do is just spend time with them. And we did a prep call for that session for an hour and a half. You know, for those executives, that's a lot of time. And they were happy to be on that call. And they left that session saying, I really learned something here today. Thank you. So that's what I want to keep doing, is I want for people to just have an experience and believe that they have learned something. They don't have to act on it right away. I mean, I wish they would, but they don't have to act on it right away. They just have to acknowledge that they've learned something new. So that's always been our approach. And as consultants, we need to understand, and we do, that we are like the accompanists of the singer or the performer that's on stage. And our role is to make that person shine and be great at the thing that they do. And so that's my approach and my attitude about this next generation of work that we are that we're moving into, which is both in regenerative agriculture specifically to address climate issues and around the role of women and capital and transforming food and ag.
I think you having a seat at the table with those groups, which a lot of people within the regenerative ag space wouldn't do, is a testament to how you're approaching looking at gender equality as well, because we have to get people, as you said, speaking the same language and finding those values. And I think your dog agrees with me.
My dog agrees with you.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. There's a call to action right there.
You know what her favorite thing is? She's a new dog. I mean, she's young. She just turned one.
Yeah.
And she's a digger. And she's been digging in my garden in Long Island and in my backyard in Long Island. And she digs until something comes out, whether it be a worm or a mouse or some other creature. So she is absolutely into aerating soil and getting more mycorrhizal fungi in that soil. Yes, she is my partner.
Perfect.
I'm here.
A tilling friend. So let me ask this, if I could, Karen, for my last question. And I did want to talk a bit. I know you've been working with the James Beard Foundation for a while. I think that's very exciting. And I'll just include a link to what you've been doing on their conference program. But the question I had for you is sometimes, you know, the work we do, there's always a lot of people that are impressed by these conversations. I find it somewhat condescending sometimes when people tell me the great work that I'm doing and how impressed they are with that. And so you know, as a son, as a husband and a father of a daughter, I care greatly about gender equality. And I think the Me Too movement should strike a nerve with every dude, every guy, and every man out there. We all have this direct tie and affinity with women in our life. So aside from only direct investing or not coming across of conceding or condescending to the approach that I love your work and what you're doing, what other meaningful ways can dudes support this and establish parity and equality in food, ag, and investing?
Wow, that's a wonderful, beautiful question and a big one. I think that what dudes can do, young dudes and more mature dudes, I think what dudes can do is to take more girls and women out for a meal or a walk or drink if they're older and ask them one thoughtful question and sit and listen to the answer without talking. That's one thing that everybody, that any dude can do, is to not interrupt, to not bring their own story or perspective into the woman's story or perspective until she has stopped speaking and asks another question. I think to just imagine a world, and they only have to do this for a half hour, an hour, imagine the world where your voice cannot easily be heard by the people that you are trying to impact or influence, and to experiment with that for a half hour or an hour.
That's great advice. And I will live that myself. I didn't know where to jump in on that too, because I didn't want to cut you off. But I agree. I think that, boy, that's exciting. So I will think about that personally, and I will help amplify that message. I think that is a very, very sound acumen. So Karen, where can our listening audience learn more about what you're up to at KKNP and maybe find additional information about this forthcoming investigation and report that you're doing?
Yes, thank you for offering that. Our website, kknp.com, is a great source of information for the type of work we do, the across the agriculture, food, and health spectrum, the approaches and the methods that we take to solve people's agriculture, food, and health problems. Next week on Tuesday, there will be probably by the time this podcast comes out, there will be a link on our homepage to the role of women capital and the transformation of food and agriculture, an investigation. There'll be a link to that paper with information also about how people can get more information about it if they want to read the long form and or support our initiative. So we are raising $150,000 over the next 6 months to achieve this work in a very high quality, data-based, thorough, investigative manner. And glad I have two media partners who are their MO anyway. And to really put this robust data set together and start to model what the future could look like for women across agriculture and food.
Hmm. Well, I'll just empower our listening audience that if you are in a mahogany row or mahogany office, if you're in a family office, if you're a misogynist lowlife in the Oval Office, just sitting here and listening to the fact that we need to invest in women to produce our future food, it just makes pragmatic sense. It's part of our best workforce moving forward, and it's unquestionable that this is what we need to do to find gender equality and be more empathetic to the folks that we love. So, Karen, I can't thank you enough to partake in today's conversation. I learned a great deal. I know our audience will. And I'll just say until next time.
Okay. Well, right back at you. I thoroughly enjoyed this and also learned from you. So thank you. And enjoy the snow. It just started falling here in New York during this time we've been together.
Very good. I will. We are a few hours behind you in Boston, but we will be getting it soon. So thank you so much.
Take care. Happy Thanksgiving.